Good morning. I guess I should introduce myself. My name is Cleo. This is my wife, Mary. We're glad to be with you here this morning. We come all the way from Hot Springs, Israel, which is a long ways away. And it's a really tiny town. It's right outside of Jerusalem. We've lived there all of our lives. It's our hometown, and our family lives there, a whole extended family. My mother and father are from there. In fact, my dad was really famous in our village, but that's another story for another time. But everyone there essentially just knows us as Cleo and Mary, the bread makers. Now, I know when I say bread maker, this is what you think of. And we don't do this in our culture. From what I understand, you dump some ingredients and then you do something with this. I don't know what. And then out comes bread. But that's not how we make bread in our culture. You see, we make it from scratch. We make it with our hands. We start with the wheat that we grow out in our fields. And we have these huge fields outside of our home there in our village where we grow barley and we grow wheat. And then when it's time to harvest, we cut it down and we bring it in. But then you can't just make bread from wheat. You have to grind it up. And so out in our storehouse, we have these huge millstones where you take the wheat kernels or the wheat berries and you put them in between these millstones and you grind them. And you break them down because it's only when you break open the wheat berries or the kernels, and it's only when you grind it and you mill it down that you get this really fine powder called flour. And then we take the flour, and we put it in a bowl. We add a little bit of hot water, and we begin to mash it together and knead it together into dough. But we're not done yet because you have to add a little bit of leaven from yesterday's dough, and you add that to the dough, and then you work the leaven all the way in until all of the dough becomes leavened, and then you take it and you sit it out, and you have to let it rise. And once it's risen to the perfect shape or the perfect form or the perfect density, only when it's perfect, then do we put it into our oven. And we have this huge oven in our kitchen. It's where we bake all of our bread, not just for our family, but for the whole village. And then, there's nothing like pulling fresh bread out of the oven. Because after you've done all the hard work, after you've grown the wheat, after you've milled the flour, after you've grinded it and crushed it down, after you've kneaded the dough, after you've let it rise, after you've baked it in the oven, you pull it out and you can almost feel the warmth in your hands. You can smell the aroma of bread. But then you have to break it open. And when you break it open, you can taste the goodness inside. You're hungry, aren't you? Here, have a little bread. Should have sat on the front row this morning. There you go. Here, take some. You see, that's what we do. That's how we make bread. That's why everyone just simply calls us the bread makers. Now, as I said, we come from a little town out in Israel called Hot Springs. It's a long ways away. It was a long journey to get here to Denver, Colorado this morning. But we love journeys. There's something about journeys that are really meaningful to us because we find that whenever you go on a journey, whenever you travel somewhere, you see a different landscape outside. You see snow in March. And as you begin to see a different perspective, whenever you travel anywhere, whenever you see a different landscape, you begin to change. It's almost as if you can start seeing the world a little bit differently. There's something about journeys that can begin to actually change and transform you. Remember a journey that first did that for us? It was a journey we took to Galilee. See, we had a bad crop that year. Our wheat, our barley had not come in like it normally does, and we weren't sure what to do. But we had heard rumors that up in Galilee, they had a bumper crop. Things had gone really well. There were fields of wheat, golden wheat, as far as the eye could see. And so Mary and I packed up our belongings. We made sure the grandparents were taking care of the kids, and we would be fine being gone for a few days. And then we traveled several days' journey up to Galilee. And when we got there, sure enough, the rumors were true. There were fields of golden wheat and hillsides as far as the eye could see. And so we bartered and we traded and we bought wheat and we loaded our wagons down for several days until we had plenty of wheat to last for the rest of the year. But before we left, we had also heard from the people up there, you've got to hear this new rabbi. He's going around and he's teaching and there's something different about it. He's not like all the other rabbis. And so sure enough, the day before we left, we found ourselves in this crowd of people all listening to this new rabbi teach. His name was Jesus. And there were hundreds, maybe even thousands of people gathered there, and he was up on this hillside. We weren't in a synagogue listening to this rabbi teach, but he was on this hillside. We were all sitting among the wheat, and he began to talk about God's rule, God's reign coming into Israel, God establishing a new government right here in Israel. God was up to something new. He was doing something new, and that we all could be a part of it. But he didn't just talk about this. After he finished teaching, he came and he began to heal people. People who were sick. People who had had diseases. People who had illnesses, clearly, all of their lives. He just went around and he was touching them and healing them. And we wouldn't have believed it if we hadn't have seen it with our own eyes, but we actually saw it. He taught. He healed people. And then it was starting to get dark and the day was getting long, and we were thinking like everyone else, kind of getting antsy. We were hungry and we didn't know where we were going to stay because we were going to make the long journey back to Hot Springs down south the next morning. And so we were going to have to find lodging that night. And we were looking around, and I think everyone else was kind of looking around wondering, what do we do at this point? When all of a sudden Jesus raised his hands and he said, wait. And one of his followers brought him this basket. And he took out of the basket a piece of bread. And he had just a few baskets. It looked like just a few loaves of bread there. And he raised it up to heaven and he thanked God for the bread, which we love because we thank God for bread every single day. And then he blessed it. And then he broke it. And then he began passing it around. And we were in the back, and we were thinking, like many of you are thinking, like only the front row people are going to get bread. There's just a couple of baskets up there. Like, how is this going to work? And we waited, and a few minutes later, sure enough, the baskets began to come our way, and they were full of bread. And we started taking it, and we were breaking it, and we were eating it, and it was good bread. We know good bread. It was good bread. And we passed it around, and everybody was eating. And our first question was, how in the world did he do that? I mean, we saw he just had a few baskets. It's almost as if he miraculously multiplied the bread. How did he do that? But there was a deeper question, because it was almost as if I wanted to say to Jesus, why did you do this? Why did you serve us this bread? Why did you serve me, Cleo, a bread maker from Hot Springs? Why did you serve me bread? And have you ever had that feeling when someone serves you that you're being invited into something? It's almost as if they're inviting you into something deeper and more meaningful, and you're not really sure what it is, but there's part of you that wants to be a part of it. That's how we felt. And it was on that day that we became followers of Jesus. We decided to travel back to Galilee as often as we could. And every time Jesus came down, even into Samaria or farther down into our area of Judea for one of the festivals, we went out to hear him. We went out to see him, to learn more about him. We got to know the other followers of Jesus, and they welcomed us into their family. That's what it felt like. Like we were joining a family of people that were following this guy who was saying things and doing things that were amazing. We couldn't believe it. He kept talking about God's rule and reign breaking into our world in a new way, and God would reestablish this government in Israel and this kingdom, and we wanted to be a part of that. And he actually looked at us in the eyes and said, you can be a part of it. And one day, I got some time alone. It was Mary and I. We got some time to talk with Jesus, and he asked us our names, and he asked us what we did. We said we were bread makers. He said, let me try some of your bread. And we gave it to him, and he said, this is really good. You guys are good at this. And of course, we were like beaming, and we couldn't believe it that he was saying this about us. And he said, tell me about how you make your bread. So I went through the whole spiel, like we go from the wheat fields, and I told him the whole thing, and he looked at me, he said, I got an idea, you should call this farm to table. It's like, that is good, Jesus. You should copyright that, Jesus. But he said, I want to invite you into something. I want you and Mary, I want you to be a part of this kingdom that I'm talking about. I want you, all of you, your bread, your business, what you do, your lives, I want you to serve this kingdom. And we said, well, of course, that would be amazing. And we had these huge visions in our mind because one day maybe Jesus is going to become the king and we'll be servants at the palace. We'll be the ones supplying and providing all of the bread for his court and for his government. And he said, yes, I want you to be a part of this. And in fact, he looked at us and he said, in a couple of months, I'm going to come back down to Jerusalem to celebrate the Passover. That's going to be really special this year. I want you to be there. I want you to be a part of it. And would you and Mary, would you make the bread for the Passover feast this year? We said, of course. So we went back home and a couple of months passed and we got ready because we didn't live very far from Jerusalem. It was just about a day's walk. And so we packed our things and we had been to Passover there before and we got ready and we packed our things and we began on the road to Jerusalem to celebrate Passover. And I remember as we were walking, Mary asked me on the road, she said, what do you think is going to happen when we get there? Well, what do you think is going on with Jesus? What did he mean when he said, it's going to be a special Passover this year? I said, I think he's the one. I think he's the anointed one sent from God. I think he could be the deliverer we've been waiting for. I think he could be our anointed one, our Mashiach, or in your language, our Messiah. Because we've been waiting and we've been praying and we've been hoping for someone to come and install a new government and to liberate us as a people and help us win our independence from the Romans. Because the Romans were everywhere. We hated the Romans. They had soldiers everywhere. They took taxes everywhere we went. Every time we saw them, it was a brutal reminder that they were in charge and we were not. That Caesar was on the throne and God was not. And the history of our people for hundreds of years had been that way. Hundreds of years ago, it was the Babylonians that came in and conquered us. And then we were subjects of the Mede Empire. And then we were subjects of the Persian Empire. And then we were subjects of the Greek Empire. And then we were subjects of the Seleucid Empire. And now the Roman Empire. And so we've been waiting for a time when God would come and free us and liberate us from our enemies. But it had been hundreds of years since we experienced that. Now, there was one bright spot in our history. About 200 years ago, we were ruled by the Seleucids or the Syrians. And they had one horrible king who had come down. His name was Antiochus Epiphanes. And he had actually come down into Jerusalem. And he had laid siege to the city and destroyed it. And he had gone into the temple, our holy temple where we worshiped God. And he had outlawed all of our practices. He had outlawed all of our Jewish rituals. He didn't let us worship our God in the way we wanted. And he even desecrated the temple. He set up an altar right there in the middle of the temple to the Greek god of Zeus. It's one of the worst things that's ever happened in the history of our people. But God didn't forget us. Because he raised up a liberator. It was a man named Judas Maccabeus. Maybe you've heard of him. And he wouldn't take it anymore. Judas Maccabeus was an anointed one. He was our Mashiach, our Messiah. And God raised him up and he amassed a small army. It was nothing in comparison to the Seleucid army. And in fact, the Seleucids had sent a garrison of 5,000 soldiers into our town, Hot Springs, right outside of Jerusalem. And they had stationed them there after they had laid siege to Jerusalem. And they were just waiting to see if anyone would potentially attack. Well, God raised up Judas Maccabeus, and he had this small army. And under the power of God, he defeated the 5,000 soldiers right there in our hometown. And we now know it as one of the greatest battles in all of Israelite history. It was a time when God liberated us. Because Judas Maccabeus then went on to liberate Jerusalem as well. And in some miraculous event. And we still celebrate it every year at the Festival of Lights. That's what Hanukkah is all about. Judas Maccabeus liberating us as a people from our enemies. And I said to Mary on the road that day, I think God is doing it again. I think Jesus, in fact, you heard Peter that one time. Peter had said to Jesus, you are the Messiah, right? You're the anointed one. And Jesus had said, yes. Yes, you're starting to get it. I think that's what Jesus meant when he said this Passover is going to be different. It's going to be special. So we got into Jerusalem. The city was bustling. There were thousands of people, pilgrims from all over Israel there to celebrate the Passover feast. And there were thousands of Roman soldiers everywhere. It's as if they could feel that something was in the air, that they needed to make sure that they kept the order, that they needed to make sure all of these Jewish pilgrims knew at the end of the day, Caesar was Lord, and you are under our boot and our heel, and we will take nothing from you. We gathered that night with the other followers of Jesus. We celebrated the Passover meal. And I remember him taking the bread and breaking it open, and looking at us gathered around this table and saying, this represents my body broken for you. Now, he had said things like this before. He had told us that he was the bread of life and that we should be nourished and be fed by him. And so that's what he was talking about, of course, that if we just keep following him and we keep being nourished by him, that he's going to lead us into this new government, this new kingdom. And we took the cup and we shared the wine. We told stories of Passover. Stories about how God long ago had liberated our people, had delivered us by raising up Moses as an anointed one. Stories about how God always liberates us from our enemies. And you could sense it. We could feel it. There was something in the air. We all had this anticipation, this expectation. Something great was about to happen. And everything changed. Because the Roman soldiers came in and they arrested Jesus. And there wasn't just a couple of them, there was a lot of them. They were everywhere. And they were brutal. And they were forceful. And they made it known that anybody who followed him would be a rebel. Anybody who followed him was a blasphemer, just like he was. And they were not going to take that anymore. Of course, we were scared. Many of us ran. It was chaos. We didn't know what to do. We didn't know what was happening. Jesus, what's going on? Surely this is part of your plan, right? I mean, surely you've got some plan. Surely something is going on here and you're about to like throw off your cloak of powerlessness and like take control and show them who is really the king and who is really the boss. But it never happened. He was arrested. He was put on trial by the Jewish leaders. by the Roman leaders. Even the crowd started crying out to crucify him. He was executed, hung on a cross. And what do you do? What do you do when the thing that you've been hoping in, the thing that you've been believing in, what do you do that the thing you are so certain was true about him is not true? What do you do when your dreams are shattered, when all of your plans, the way you saw your life going, the way you thought God was moving, the thing that you thought God had planned for you, what do you do when all of it falls apart? When it doesn't seem like there ever was a plan. There wasn't a plan, was there, Jesus? I mean, all that talk about this is the Father's will, it's a lie, wasn't it? This isn't the Father's will. This would never be part of your plan. See, I used to have hope and faith in him. I used to believe that he was the one. When he died on a cross outside of Jerusalem, my hope and my faith died with him. Mary was distraught. She had actually stayed. Most of the men, we were scared. We knew that we would be caught and we would be tried as well, and so we ran. But for some reason, the soldiers let the women stay, and she was actually there at the foot of the cross. She saw the blood pouring from his side. She was overwhelmed with grief. She was overcome with emotion. Me, I was just angry, bitter, mad, that Jesus could let us down, that God could let us down. And so what do you do in one of those moments? I'll tell you what we did. We went home. Because there's nothing else here for us. He's gone. God doesn't care. There's nothing else here. Let's just go home and go make some bread. So the next morning, we packed up our belongings. It was Sunday morning. We went out to the road to head home. And I remember a couple things about that morning. I remember the birds were singing. It was the strangest sound, because it seemed to be in such contrast to the darkness and the horrible weekend that we had experienced. But they were singing. I remember arguing with Mary. She was upset. I was mad. I wanted her to be mad. She wanted me to be upset. Walking along the road, and then this guy comes up beside us, and he's going on the same road, and he asks if he could join us, and we said, sure. He said his name was Fred. He said, what are you talking about? We said, what do you think we're talking about? Jesus of Nazareth was just crucified. Were you not just in Jerusalem? Did you not see and experience and hear what happened? Mary gave me one of those stop talking looks. Just drop it. But I wouldn't. I didn't let it go. I looked at him and I said, you see, we believed. We had hoped that he was the one. He said he was going to redeem Israel, and we believed he would do it. He had said things. He had done things. We had seen things and experienced things on all of our journeys with him. We knew he was the one. But clearly, he wasn't. Because he let us down, and God let us down, and he was crucified, and now he's gone. Then Fred looked at me in the eyes, and he said, "How does that make you feel? What are you, some kind of counselor? How do you think it makes me feel? I'm angry. I'm frustrated. I'm confused. Why would God do this? I can't believe God would do this. And I don't want to have any part of that anymore. That's how I feel." A few minutes went by. We just kept walking, silent. And then he looked at me and he said, in this firm but gentle way, "Don't be so foolish. Don't give up so quickly. Maybe you just don't know the whole story. Well, why don't you fill me in, Fred?" He said, "I will. I will, but only if you're willing to listen. And only if you'll allow me to start at the beginning." I said, "Okay, go for it." And then he began to tell me a story that was bigger and better and grander and more expansive than I could have ever imagined. He said, "You remember Abraham, right? The father of our people. And you remember the story of Abraham and Sarah? How God had made a promise to them and said, 'I'm going to give you a son, and through your son, I'm going to make a great nation that's going to bless all the nations of the earth.' And Sarah and Abraham looked back to God and said, 'There's no way you can do that. Our bodies are old and broken. I can't have children,' Sarah said. 'I'm infertile, I'm barren, our bodies are broken. How could that ever come be?' But God kept his promise. And somehow through their broken bodies, he gave them a son, life, and a nation. He said, 'You remember Moses, right? The story of Passover. You remember how broken Moses was? You remember how he was wrecked with doubt and uncertainty? You remember how he had fled into the desert? And when God had approached him and said, 'I want to use you to liberate my people,' Moses said, 'I can't do it. I'm not qualified. I'm not good enough. I'm a broken man.' But God used a broken man to liberate his people from bondage. And you remember all the kings of Israel, right? You remember Saul and David and Solomon and the rest and how broken they were. You've read the Psalms. You've seen David's heart. You saw what happened in his life. And yet somehow, some way, God still used these broken people to lead his people. And you remember the prophets? You remember how many of them gave their lives, even to the point of death. And yet somehow, even through their deaths, God breathed new life into his people. And he said, 'Don't you understand the bigger story? Maybe God wants to bring some sort of ultimate redemption, an ultimate restoration to his people. Maybe God has always been in the process of liberating and redeeming and restoring and freeing his people. And yet maybe somehow, some way, God always does it through broken people. And maybe he doesn't want to just free you from the Egyptians or even the Seleucids, or even the Romans today. Maybe he wants to free you from brokenness and death itself. And Jesus' broken body on the cross, and Jesus' death on the cross, maybe that was some way that God wants to free you. We've been walking for almost 2 hours, And he told us this long story. And if you ever had that feeling where you can't process it all in your mind, it's like so much information is coming in and you don't know how it fits all together and you're trying to see if it fits all together. But even as that's happening in your mind, there's something in your heart that's even more significant that's going on. There's something in your heart that's saying, is it possible that this is true? We got to our hometown. There's a sign there that said Hot Springs this way, or in our language, it's the word Emmaus. We knew he was going to keep going, and Mary looked at him and said, you've got a long ways to go, and it's almost dark. Why don't you stay with us tonight? We don't have much to offer. We can give you a bed. We can give you bread. What do you say, Fred? I wanted it too. I wanted him to stay with us too. I don't know if I wanted to hear more or what, but he said, okay, I'll stay with you. We got to our home. We showed him where he would be able to stay. We didn't have any meat. We didn't have many vegetables, but we had bread. And so we prepared dinner. And we sat down, and I remember reaching for the bread and him putting his hands on my arms, and he stopped me and he said, why don't you let me serve you? And I don't know what it was about that, but again, I could feel something moving in my heart, because all along I've been thinking, is it possible that there's something going on here? Is it possible that there's something deeper? Is it possible that beneath all of the pain and the bitterness and the anger and the resentment, that there's still a wheat kernel of faith still under there? Is it possible that what he's been telling us is maybe true? He took the bread. And he came over and he looked at Mary and I. And he broke it. And he said, in this broken bread, in my broken body, is your life. In that moment, it's like we saw. It was Jesus. We were with him. He was with us. And he had been with us. He had been with us on our whole journey, the whole time. He had been with us in our pain, in our questions, in our doubts, in our uncertainties, in our anger, in our grief, in our disappointment, in everything. He had been with us. And it wasn't some sort of super spiritual thing going on. It wasn't a hallucination or an illusion. He was actually, physically, tangibly with us. And the realization became flooding into our minds, into our hearts. He's not dead. He is alive. We don't know how. We don't know what God has done, but he has risen from the dead. And if that's true, then that means the entire story is true. That means the entire story that he told us is true. That means that somehow through his brokenness and through his death, he's overcome brokenness and death. And that what happened on the cross outside of Jerusalem wasn't the end of a story. It was the beginning of a new story. That this is the kingdom. This is the rule. This is God's reign breaking in that he had been talking about all along. And if this is true, if he's really alive, then that means everything has changed. And in that moment, he vanished. And yet we knew it wasn't like a trick. He wasn't messing with us. Well, the Fred thing, he was messing with us there. But it meant he had business to do. He had a kingdom to establish. He was going to go meet other people on their journeys. He was going to show them what he was about doing. And we were so excited. We were so blown away by what had happened that we packed up our belongings immediately and we ran back to Jerusalem. And when we got there, we met the other followers and the other disciples. And it turns out Jesus had appeared to many of them as well. He appeared to some at the tomb. He had appeared to others on their journey along the way. And they had asked us, tell us your story. When did he appear to you? And the question they asked us was, when did you first recognize that it was him? When did you recognize it was Jesus? Was it when you saw him on the road and you first met him? No. No, he told us his name was Fred and did some Jedi mind trick thing. Like we didn't recognize him there. Did you recognize him when he started telling you the story? No. I mean, yes, sort of. I mean, things were changing and we couldn't understand it and we were taking it all in. And so something was happening when he was telling us a story about how all the scriptures were fulfilled in him. But no, we didn't recognize him in that moment. Well, did he do a miracle? Was that when you recognized him? No. No miracles. Well, when did you know it was him? We knew it was him when he broke the bread. Because we understood in that moment. It's not until you're broken open can God bring new life. We understood that in God's kingdom, brokenness leads to redemption. In God's kingdom, death leads to resurrection.